Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. Once again, thank you so much for being here. I'm Carol Murphy. And as many of you probably already know, this is Pledge Drive Week. And it officially ends Saturday at 10 p.m. We've reached our goal, but I think we need to set a new goal at 20,000. And there's still plenty of time and opportunity. And this evening, I also wanted to mention our guest. We have a repeat guest. Shel Horowitz is with us this evening. He's an American author, speaker, and a marketing consultant. And we have a lot to talk about. So in just a moment, Shel will be back, and he's going to tell you all about what he does. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock.
I saw a bull me lit an endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and ran, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of a diamond dance. And all around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me.
Thank you so much for listening. This is Carol Murphy, and you're listening to Heartstock Radio. This is Pledge Drive Week. You can call us right now. There are people waiting and ready to receive. The number is 782-2263, and we have a new goal of $20,000 to meet tomorrow, 10 o'clock. So, hi, Shel. How are you?
Just great, Carol. How are you?
Fantastic. I really appreciate you being here again. I felt like we ran out of time, and we have a lot to talk about. But let's start out at the beginning and tell all of our listeners who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, my name is Shel Horowitz, and I'm the person who helps business figure out how they can make money solving things like hunger, poverty, war, and catastrophic climate change. And I do this not through guilt and shame, and not even through getting involved particularly with charities, but by helping them find and develop and market profitable products and services that actually address these things. I've written a few books on this, most recently, Guerrilla Marketing to Heal the World, which was published by Morgan James, and is my 10th book. I can't quite believe it, but I have actually published 10 books.
You've got a lot to say.
Yeah, definitely. And two of them are in the Guerrilla Marketing series. I did Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green in 2010, and then more recently, Guerrilla Marketing to Heal the World, taking that message deeper. And as I kind of discover how deeply it can go, and I'm not done discovering that yet, there's always more to say. I could certainly do more books.
So I really want to get into a little bit more about what was your growing up like in the Bronx, right? And
yeah, the Bronx,
it's always
yeah.
interesting because there seems to be a path that people start on, you know, their feet set on this path early on in life. Did you have any idea that you would be doing this when you were younger in the
Bronx?
Well,
I certainly didn't have an idea that I'd be doing this, but I did have an idea that I'd be doing something to make the world better in some way. I have been an activist since age 12. I was still in the Bronx at that point. I've gone from that very, very urban, intense setting to I now live on a working dairy farm in rural western Massachusetts, and behind the farm is a beautiful mountain that's a state park, and in front of the farm is the Connecticut River, and there's like 10 houses in my neighborhood that I can walk to. So it's
Sounds
a very,
lovely.
Very different kind of environment from the New York City of my childhood. But what has been consistent is that I've always been motivated by how do I make the world better. I got good training. My mom was a civil rights activist she was actually a tester for the Urban League. So if a black family tried to rent an apartment and was told it was already rented, sweet white lady mom would go and find out if it was really already rented, and she would try to rent it. So I wish I could have asked her if she had ever had the opportunity to check out any of the Trump properties, which I know there were lawsuits yes. about their rental policies in the 1970s. Yes. So growing up in that environment, there was always the expectation that you were going to do something to make the world better. And I went to my first peace demonstration in 1969 at 12 and became a marketer originally because I was promoting some of the peace and social justice and environmental causes I was involved with. And it's been nice the last few years to watch these two pieces of my life, the activist and the marketer, really begin to braid together and become one coherent whole. And yeah, it's a long and somewhat curvy journey from where I started to where I am, but it's at the 30,000 foot level, it makes sense, at least
yes.
to me.
Yes, it does. So you came by it very honestly, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's really a lifetime passion that
so
I feel like we are at the beginning of a new age of possibility, that we have
I agree.
So many convergences of, we have technologies that enable us to fix things we could never fix before. We have communication systems that enable yes. us to organize in ways that are totally different from what was true even as recently as 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Just all of these things coming together. We have so much more knowledge of the way things work. The solar collectors that I put on my house in 2004 are totally obsolete. We know how to make them so much better now. And all of these things come together, and we're beginning to understand the biology of change, which is, it's been based largely in physics until now. And
yes.
we can now look mm-hmm. at, there's actually a section in my new book, Guerrilla Marketing to Heal the World, called Mother Nature Chief Engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how nature has really solved pretty much any engineering problem we've had, and solved it better, and with no waste left over, and with no toxicity. And we need to learn how to do that, and we're just beginning to do that. That's a concept called biomimicry. Very, very exciting
yes.
stuff.
We've talked about that on the show. Nicole Miller came on, and that's a great program. But I wanted to go back. You said something earlier, and you said that somehow the activist became a marketer. How did that happen, Shell?
Well, in 1972, I was a high school student. I was 15. And I don't remember exactly how I got involved with them, but there was a right-wing alternate newspaper at my high school. And I was closed out of a legitimate newspaper because only people in the special English journalism class were able to write for that paper. But somehow I got to talking with them, and they decided to let me write for them. And I did things like cover peace demonstrations, and they would run my stuff with disclaimers that says, this does not represent the views of the management. But the important thing was, it would run my stuff. So those were actually my first published clips of the more than 1,000 articles that I've published. The first probably 5 or 6 of those were for this this right-wing underground newspaper at my high school. And, you know, basically what I was doing, even as early as that, is I was looking at ways of making the message appealing to people who maybe were not convinced. The people reading this newspaper were by and large not the progressives and liberals who were organizing the peace demonstrations. So I was doing my best with the skills I had at 15 to present what was going on in ways that would be appropriate and acceptable to that audience. So mm-hmm. it was a very early lesson in matching message to market.
Mm. Persuasive speech 101, mm-hmm. right? Persuasive
yeah, exactly. sweet
speech. When it's much different giving a message to an audience that probably won't receive it positively.
Well, again, there are ways of framing it. And this mm-hmm. is something, if we jump forward roughly 50 years, you know, the stuff I'm doing now is very much aligned with finding the message points that are going to resonate. So I mentioned earlier that I don't try to convince people out of guilt or shame. Guilt and shame are very ineffective strategies for convincing people. I'm looking at enlightened self-interest. I talk about examples such as how it is that a company as profit-driven as Walmart made deep green decisions to change their supply chain, to change the way their stores operate, to change everything, the packaging of what they're selling, to have less impact on the environment. And these are not tree huggers. These are not people who generally are perceived as caring about anything other than the bottom line at Walmart. But they discovered that the bottom line at Walmart was deeply enhanced by, number one, greening their processes and those of their suppliers, and therefore shaving big costs.
Yeah, it's efficient.
And number two, selling green products to people who weren't going to buy them from Whole Foods, who have probably never been in a Whole Foods in their lives. So Walmart actually sells more organic food than Whole Foods does. It sells gazillions of low wattage light bulbs, all sorts of green products and services. And again, they're selling them to the white bread eating, pickup driving, working class American who has never really thought about those issues. And I have my own issues with Walmart, and I am not in a great rush to go shopping there, but I totally applaud what they've done in bringing these products and services to much, much wider audiences in a way that those audiences can understand and hear and accept and embrace.
And about how long ago would you say Walmart started making this shift?
Oh, probably 12 to 15 years. I don't know exactly. It was when Lee Scott was their CEO.
So that wasn't just yesterday. It's something that they've been doing for a while.
Yeah, so, you see this with many, many of the big companies, brands like Procter and Gamble and Unilever and Ford Motor Company and Toyota and Colgate. They've all been getting in on this. They all have sustainability departments. Many of them have green product lines. It's become mainstream, and I like to think that I had at least a little bit to do with that.
So, yeah, what did you have to do? Do you feel like what you're doing has a direct impact on big guys like Walmart?
I think it has an indirect impact. I think being part of this movement for 40, 50 years, watching that movement grow, on a personal level, I have been a vegetarian since 1973, and I have been a supporter of fair trade organic chocolate and coffee for probably at least 15 years now, somewhere around 2003. And when I go into a store and I have conversations with people like, are your cacao products fair trade? And if the answer is no, I don't buy them. Mm-hmm. It's a little thing, but it has influence. If I go to the trouble of sorting out my recycling, and here's the paper, and here's the metal, and here's the glass, and I'm bringing them all to places where they can be turned into products and used again, that helps to create a manufacturing capability. And then on the other side, creating the demand, when I go and buy toilet paper, I'm buying recycled toilet paper. So I'm just one drop in the ocean. But you get enough of these drops, and you have a stream.
A wave.
And it becomes current, and it becomes a river, and it becomes the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. And I do think it's a wave, and it's growing. So let's talk a little bit when we come back about your books. And there's two that specifically I want to talk about, the two most recent ones. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening. This is Pledge Drive Week, and the number to call is 782-2263. Also online, BeautAmericaRadio.com. www.shellhorowitz.org. And there's definitely a way for you to contribute. Thanks for the love. We've reached our goal. We're a little over $15,600. And there's a lot of success here at KBMF, and it truly is love-powered. That's what the LP stands for. And this evening, we are here with Shell Horowitz. And we were just talking about Shell's last two books and a whole lot of other really good stuff. Shell, one question that I had, because I did a little digging about Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green. Your second book is Guerrilla Marketing to Heal the World. I love the second title even more than the first one. And Jay Levinson. Wow. How did you meet Jay Levinson? He was your co-author for Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green.
Jay Levinson, for those who are not familiar, founded the Guerrilla Marketing brand with the first Guerrilla Marketing book in 1984. And he was an advertising legend who was involved with campaigns like the Energizer Buddy and United's Friendly Skies, really big stuff. He worked for Leo Burnett, which was a prominent ad agency. This is in the 50s and 60s. And then he moved to California and started teaching entrepreneurship. And he discovered that there was nothing written about marketing for people with not millions of dollars for advertising. So he wrote this book. And then there are lots and lots of guerrilla marketing books out there. These are the two that you mentioned are my 8th and 10th books, and they are among roughly 100 books in the guerrilla marketing series. And mine are the two about green and social change.
What was the 9th book?
I'm proud of that. The 9th book was called Green and Profitable, and it was a compilation of a column that I wrote for 4 years. And so, again, very much relevant to, and some pieces of that book actually made their way into Guerrilla Marketing to Heal the World. And I originally encountered Jay and his students when he started teaching entrepreneurship, by the way, included Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, among others. So he was kind of a big guy in that world, and it's really an honor to be associated with him, and I'm still in touch with his widow. And in fact, I just spoke in May 2018. I spoke at the Guerrilla Marketing Summit in Florida, which was great. But anyway, I got an introduction from a friend of mine who was one of their best-selling marketing authors to the publisher at John Wiley & Sons. This had been 2008, I think. And I pitched him that Wiley should republish a book I had self-published called Principled Profit, and that I would expand and update it and make it more germane to the world of 2010 when it came out, as opposed to 2003 when the previous book. A lot had changed. So they took a very long time to answer. And while I was waiting for them to answer, I came up with the idea that if they said no, I could ask Jay Levinson to do this as a guerrilla marketing book, because I had read enough of Jay's books to know that he was sympathetic but not particularly knowledgeable in the area of green and social change marketing. So Wiley eventually answered and said yes, and I'm like, well, duh, I could still ask Jay, hey, Wiley, what do you think about this idea of bringing in Jay as a co-author and making it a guerrilla mark? Oh, you mean we get two marketing superstars? We like it, yeah. So I sent Jay an email. I had his email address from years earlier when I had interviewed him for some newsletter article I was writing, and it still worked, an AOL address. We discussed the idea of doing this book together. The way it worked is that I did 95% of it, and he did a tiny little bit, but he had the brand, and he had the, at the time, 84,000 subscribers, and he brought a lot to the table that I didn't have, and I had the subject expertise. I had the knowledge of the green market that he didn't have. So we did that first book together, and then Wiley took it off the market, and I got the rights back, and I went to Morgan James. Actually, they came to me, and they said, we hear that you're looking for a new publisher. Let's talk. So they were very easy to work with, and we expanded and revised, and I did have to knock out some of the marketing 101 stuff to make room for all the groovy social change stuff about how business can actually affect things like hunger and poverty and war and catastrophic climate change. And so there was like 40,000 words that were in Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green. There's another 40,000 words that weren't. That's all new material. And then there's some stuff that I took out to make room for that. And so that's the new and current book that is the one that I recommend, because it's the one that's really much more deeply about how business can make a profit while changing the world. There's a lot of information if you go to goingbeyondsustainability.com. There is a page for the book, and you can get there just by clicking on the cover on the homepage. And it's really kind of fun. I mean, I feel like the work that I'm doing the last few years is the work that I was born to do. It is the most satisfying, the most meaningful, the most exciting, and I'm hoping it will become the most lucrative. It's not there yet.
And how has it changed more recently for you, Shell? Why are you saying that why are you saying that this is the most satisfying and rewarding right now? How has it changed?
Because it's really doing the work that I feel like I was put on this earth to do. It's showing people that we don't have to live with these big evils just because we always have. There are things we can do about it. Right. We have solutions. And I just find that incredibly exciting and empowering. So, you know, to work with a company and to be able to say, you've got this great product, and here are the four or five markets that you have not seen that we can go after, or you have some penetration in this good market, but you're missing this piece that the market is really looking for. Is this something you can develop? These kinds of strategic questions. And then the specifics about, okay, how do you take a product like this to market and get in front of people without spending an enormous fortune? And so, like, right now I have a client who makes or is in the process of starting a company that will make portable, foldable solar LED lamps. Now, I wrote about LED lamps in Guerrilla Marketing to Heal the World, and I didn't even know about her. She's even in my area, one of my few local clients. And then she came to me, and here I'd been already talking about the technology that she's using in print, and then she comes in with this new variation on it, the one that fits in your pocket. It's the size of a cell phone. And so it's great to attract a client like that and to be able to work with her and to help her get in front of the world in a way that maybe she hadn't thought about. So I've written some web pages for her. I've done a fair amount of kind of deep strategy work with her. She's still in the startup phase. She's had some production delays and has not actually gone into the market yet. So we don't know yet the power of the advice I'm giving her and the advice that other people are giving her, because it's untested. But the concept that a lamp like this could make a difference in people's lives is totally tested, because there are many, many other companies in that space. None of them, as far as I know, make anything that fits in your pocket. So that's her unique piece of it.
And so she's, how will this,
With her, for example, we found a way to reach the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, and we started a conversation with her about using these lamps for disaster relief. We started a conversation with Coca-Cola about how they might be able to use their network in Puerto Rico of distributors to make a difference in this island that still has thousands of people without power months and months and months after those hurricanes.
Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to talk about a little bit about, Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green, I found that on Audible. Is the new one on Audible?
No, I haven't done an audio version of that yet.
Okay.
I probably should.
Yeah.
So again, The Guerrilla Marketing Goes Green, if you're looking for an audiobook, that is the one that you have to get right now. And it's it has a good chunk of the information in the newer book, but it really doesn't make the connection so much about really not just sustainability, but solving the problems. I believe very much in regenerativity, Carol, in going past where we are to where we want to be. Mm-hmm. Sustainability is about running in place. And that's certainly better than going backwards. But I'd like to see forward movement. So I talk about regenerativity. I actually call myself, my job title at Going Beyond Sustainability is Transformpreneur.
So tell us a little bit about some of the successes that you've had in, you know, companies where marketing efforts and whatnot really made a big difference in a product that made a difference in the world.
Well, I have been more of a popularizer of other people's products than right. this has been, hasn't really been the core of my own client practice so far. But I do want to talk about one example that's in the grassroots organization world as opposed to the commercial product world, because it's really what got me on this path, Carol. And that was in 1999, I had just moved to the house I live in only a year before. And I read in the local paper that a developer was going to put 40 McMansions, 40 big trophy homes up the mountain immediately next to the state park behind my house. And like everybody, all the experts in the article were saying, oh, this is terrible. There's nothing we can do. And my wife and I went out and started a movement that stopped it. And I thought it would take us 5 years. And we did it in 13 months flat, so just over a year. And the land was protected forever. Every time I drive north from my house, I see the mountain, and the mountain doesn't have houses at the top. And I feel really glad about the work that I did. But that really was what got me started, that incredibly successful near-consensus campaign where we had the whole community behind us. It got me thinking really for the first time about how to integrate the marketing and the social change sides of me, the activist and the business person. And everything has come out of that. So, like, I've done a lot of speaking on this. I did a TEDx talk. I've spoken at a number of fairly major conferences. And I wish I could get my hands on some of these people to do their marketing. Like, Rocky Mountain Institute is a wonderful think tank in Colorado that has done some of the best research on how we can actually solve these problems. But they're really not marketers. They're scientists. And I would love to work mm-hmm. with people like yes. that. I would love to work with Dean Sikon from Dean's Beans Coffee, the most ethical entrepreneur I've ever encountered. And he's another one. He hates marketing. He thinks yeah. he hates marketing. He's actually really good at it.
Well, that's
but there's so much more he could be doing if he
Get
would just step
out.
Out of the way and let people help him. Mm-hmm. So
we've got
companies I would just love to work with.
Yeah, and
I'm sorry?
It is almost a media battle, it seems nowadays. It's a it's an information and an education battle.
Yeah, and I had
we're just
a
about out of time. We've got like half
time?
A minute. We got unfortunately.
Okay, well,
I hate
say,
this
the
time.
The way to get in touch with me is goingbeyondsustainability.com.
Excellent.
My phone number is 413-586-2388. And I would love to tell that story about the Montague Retreat because it was
well,
really interesting.
We'll have to have you back.
Thing,
That's
I
all there is
so.
To. This is Heartstock Radio, and we've been speaking with Shel Horowitz. Thank you so much, Shel, for being here. And definitely going to have you back.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Bye-bye for now, and we'll be back next week at 5 instead of 4. And thanks, everybody, who has shared some love and helped KBMF out and pledged, and we love you. Bye-bye.
It didn't say nothing. That side was me.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5 Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org.
As they still get hungry, I'm still there asking, is this land made for you and me? Or nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking of that freedom highway. Oh, nobody living can make me feel that this land was made for you and me.